Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And good evening or afternoon, and welcome to episode 14 of the Voice of Indie podcast. And welcome to November. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me, as usual, is my co-host, Stephen Jeeves. How you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing great. How about you, Beam?
I can't complain. Beautiful day up here in Michigan. 74 degrees and sunshine, which is really odd for November in these parts. And we had 72 yesterday with sunshine, and we got more coming for the next few days. So I'm not complaining.
We're sunny here in Alabama in the mid-70s and climbing up to about 80 this weekend. So it should be a nice weekend. So
nice.
Listeners, if you head on over to Twitter, we're monitoring hashtag Fresh Ink Group. That's the hashtag or the pound sign or the number sign, depending on how old you are. Hashtag Fresh Ink Group. You can post comments for about today's show or today's guest and or put some questions on there that we can ask today's guest.
And you can also call in. That's right. The phone lines will be open. So if you have a question or a comment for our guest tonight, that's area code 516-453-9902. Once again, that is 516-453-9902. So give us a call.
As always, today's show will be put in the archive at Blog Talk Radio. We'll also put it at freshinkgroup.com under the podcast tab. We'll put it on stephengees.com. We'll put it on beamweeks.com. And it will be on YouTube in the Fresh Ink Group channel. Just go to YouTube, search Fresh Ink Group in the search bar. It'll bring up our channel, and you can find all of our podcasts there.
Yeah, and the YouTube channel is at Fresh Ink Group, and we're now at 101 subscribers. We have crossed the 100 barrier. So, yeah, go over there. And if you like what you see, there are a lot of book trailers over there. And the commercials that we usually run on here are the audio portion of the book trailers. But one of the commercials we're running tonight comes from our guest, Larry Landgraf. But we don't have his trailer over there, but we do have the audio commercial. So go over there and subscribe. If you like the videos, hit the like button. You know, give us a little bit of support. If you see a video that you like, retweet it on Twitter. Post it on your Facebook page as well.
And make sure you subscribe. Now, if you head on over there today after today's show, you will find that we've got a new book trailer up there for Gwen Plano's The Culmination, which is the third book in her Heaven and Earth trilogy series, which is out now and available for pre-sale. We're going to try to have Gwen on the show sometime in the next few weeks, as soon as she's available, but you can go find the trailer for her new book there now. Now, today's guest is Larry Landgraf. Larry Landgraf's been with us for a little while. He's one of our favorite authors. A lifelong native of the Guadalupe River Delta on the Texas Gulf Coast, Larry Landgraf worked first as a commercial fisherman, then as a general contractor before severe injury led to his career as an author. He wrote two books, including How to Be a Smart SOB Like Me, before his epic four-season series. The father of three grown children, Larry brought his beloved city gal Ellen to the Delta in 2009. Now he teaches her the ways of his swamp, and she teaches him more than he ever imagined. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Hey, Stephen. Thank you. And Beam?
Now, do you have anything to expand on that bio?
Yeah, when I got out of college, I decided that I didn't want to be cooped up in an office or classroom anymore. So I got on a shrimp boat, and when that played out, I started a general contracting business. But I've been outside all my life and worked hard. And, you know, when I moved to the river, I think I was 16, I decided this is the place I'm going to spend the rest of my life and enjoy the fruits of my labors. And so I've worked hard, built my own house with my own two hands, and, you know, 5-bedroom house, story and a half. And it took some doing, but I got it done. But, you know, I'm still here in the swamp, and I wouldn't go anywhere else.
So, what's a day like in the swamp for you?
Right now, it's, you know, we've been in a mini drought. You know, the river's low, the grass is green, plenty of fruit on the citrus trees. But we do get water in the yard on a regular basis when it gets rainy, and we've had it in the house a couple of times. So, you know, it's just something we deal with. But, you know, just business as usual. You know, even with COVID now, you know, it's still business as usual. We take our precautions when we go to town, but, you know, this place provides a lot of food for us, and we enjoy the place. So, you know, we're not worried about COVID too much. We enjoy our swamp, and, you know, Ellen has her garden. I have my garden, and there's always plenty of yard work and housework as well.
Great. I see we've got Verwayne Greenhoe over on Twitter right now. He says he's eating popcorn in the peanut gallery. He'll not rub the butter off on the seating. Then he followed that up. Then he followed that up by saying he just bought Larry's book, and I see The Adventures of Ali Orangutan on the screen.
Okay, and I see Robert Williscroft is asking, are you seeing this? Yes, Robert, we're seeing this. So you got it right this week. Hashtag Fresh Ink Group, and that's how you get seen in here.
Yeah, Robert, like a lot of people, tried the handle, at Fresh Ink Group, and it's the hashtag that we're monitoring. So, Larry, you never planned to be an author, but how did that come about?
You know, in January 2015, in the middle of the night, I woke up with a story in my head. I couldn't get it out of my head. I couldn't go back to sleep. So I just said, well, it sounded like a pretty good story. So I got on the computer and started writing it at 2 a.m. And it just flowed from my head. And I just, you know, I started writing every day. And I just couldn't seem to stop. And the story just didn't seem to have an end to it. And even when I finished Into Autumn, the first book of my series, I still had story left. And, you know, I left a few things hanging, so, you know, there had to be a sequel. So Into Spring just flowed just like Into Autumn did. You know, I had this little voice in the back of my head just urging me on and telling me stories to tell. So Into Spring made finalist in Independent Authors Network Book of the Year. I said, well, you know, I've written several books now. I think, you know, this one won some awards. So I finally considered myself an author. And there were still more stories to tell. Then followed with Into Winter and Into Summer to complete the 4-season series. You know, I'd written 2 books before I decided it was going to be a series. And even after Into Summer, I think there's still some more story left. I don't know where I'm going to go with it, but, you know, there may be a fifth book to the series one of these days.
Well, that's the good thing about being a writer is the only limit is your imagination. So you don't know where you're going to go, but eventually you'll get there. Had you ever written anything, you know, previous to this? I know you hadn't planned on being a writer, but had you ever dabbled in it before?
I wrote a book back in 1986 to try to save my commercial fishing career. And the book didn't float, and neither did the career. That's why I became a general contractor. But when I got to this, after I wrote Into Autumn, you know, people told me, hey, man, this would make a good movie. So I decided I was going to write a screenplay. And I wrote one for Into Autumn, and the title is A Tempest in Texas. It won a few awards, and I even had a couple of producers looking at it one time. So, you know, I had to write more screenplays. I had three more books in the series, so I wrote a screenplay for each one of them. And the second one won a couple of awards, and, you know, the third and fourth, I never entered in any awards. I was hoping the producer would get a hold of one of the first two, but that hasn't happened yet. So, I'm constantly evolving. You know, I wake up in the middle of the night. I've said this 1,000 times every single night with stories in my head. You know, I need a little voice in the back of my head says, "You need to do this. You need to do that." So I'm always doing things. Here recently, I decided to write and produce some songs for my books. I have two of them out now, City Gal for Into Autumn, and No Heart at All for Into Spring. And hopefully another week or so, I'm going to have song number three out. One of these days, somebody will see something, and maybe I'll get a movie deal out of it. You never know.
Okay, did you previously say something about that Ellen was the inspiration for City Gal? Did I get that right?
She was the Eileen in Into Autumn.
Okay.
She was the City Gal in the book, and she was also the inspiration for the song City Gal. She was born in New York and grew up in California, and I found her in Austin one day. Almost 12 years ago, and she's my city gal, and she claims City Gal is her song.
Okay. Well, we can listen to a little bit of that song right now. How about it, Beam?
All righty.
But no one thought it would. The world had turned to ashes. Nothing left of his hood. Standing in the ruin of his old home. She came from the city with nothing but her clothes. She left her life behind her. She didn't have a choice. She's walking through a wasteland. She lost all hope. But miracles and wonders came to his desert land. He laid his eyes upon her. She offered him her hand. Together they would struggle until the end. They built a life together with nothing but their hands. Without one another, they wouldn't stand a chance. And one night after sunset, the young man said, "Pretty girl came to my land. She touched my soul and held my hand. She's the one that saved me from the dark. Girl, I love you so. That's a fact, I know you know. We're the ones that live here ever after."
And that right there is City Gal by our guest tonight, Larry Landgraf. And once again, if you would like to be part of the show, if you have a question or a comment for tonight's guest, be sure to pick up the phone and call 516-453-9902. Once again, that is 516-453-9902, or use hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
Who is your singer in that, Larry?
I can't use his name because he's not a free agent, but I can tell you that he's not a free agent yet.
I get it.
But But he sang the next song as well, and he's working on song number three, but he won't be singing it unless they decide to do a duet. There'll be a gal singing song number three. But he was on the Voice this year.
Oh, okay. Back in the spring.
Yeah, he's lives in Austin, and he's got a great voice, and he got in, but he got busted out in the battle rounds. But he's a great singer.
And you know, I usually watch The Voice faithfully, but in the spring, when this whole COVID thing hit and they went to no audience there and they were doing it from their homes, it just didn't feel the same for me, so I stopped watching it. So I started watching it again this new season because they're back in the studio, but it just kind of took the fun out of it.
Yeah. But, you know, I've listened to some music all my life. I just can't seem to go without music. You know, we listen to music around the house. You know, if my car's radio is broken, then the car is broken and it's got to go to the shop.
I agree.
So, you know, and, you know, Ellen was a concert pianist, and, you know, she's she loves music as well. She loves my music, but, you know, mainly she likes classical music. And, you know, I've loved classical music and country music, and, you know, a lot of different kinds of music. Yeah, I grew up on it and thrive on it.
To me, music is food for the soul. It's life.
Yes, it is. I think I might have said that somewhere. I don't know whether I copied somebody or not, but I think I might have said that a time or two.
So Larry, we know about Ellen. How about kids, grandkids, great-grandkids? You got some family?
I have three grown kids. They have given me eight grandkids. And they, in fact, Saturday, little Noah, he's 8 years old, and their football team is playing in the World Series.
Ooh.
Yeah, they've got a good little team there. So watching those eight-year-olds play out there on the football field, yeah, that's a lot of fun. And we plan on going over there. And besides, we get to visit with some of the other grandkids and kids. So I've got two girls and a boy. And the two girls live about 60 miles from here, and the boy lives about 165 miles in near Houston, on the outskirts of Houston.
She sounds like Corpus Christi area.
No, I'm north of Corpus.
You're north of Corpus, okay.
Yeah, and Houston is north of me, 165 miles.
Okay. Aside from living in the swamp and writing books and making really cool music, you're also known for some online poker and the Vegas World Series. What's that all about?
I got into poker, card games, and poker was a lot of it, you know, most of my life, you know, from the time I was, you know, 15, 16 years old on up. And one day I had a poker buddy, and he said, hey, let's go to Vegas. You know, we'd been playing online poker, and we'd play in some local casinos just across the border into Louisiana. So, you know, one day he said, hey, let's go to Vegas. Okay, why not? So we went to Vegas, and I played in, we were out there 5 days. I played 13 tournaments, and I finished first, second twice, a third, two fourth places, and a fifth place. So, you know, made a little bit of money. So, hey, this is good. So I started going back every year, and I think about the third or fourth year, I started playing in the World Series of Poker. And three consecutive years, I made cashed in the Senior Championship, which, you know, wasn't high in the money, but, you know, did make a little bit of money. I finished, like, you know, 125th up to about 250th place. And there were about 4,000 plus in each one of these tournaments.
Wow.
That's impressive.
So do you ever rub elbows with some of the big names of the poker world? I know my older brother, he's really into that stuff, and he knows all these people, you know, watches them on TV. you run into those guys out there?
Oh yeah, Johnny Chan. I played poker with Ben Affleck, James Woods. In fact, I beat James Woods. We played at a small table, and I beat James Wood, and that made my day there.
he threw a tantrum, I'll bet.
No, he was the nicest guy. And so was Ben Affleck. Ben Affleck tried to steal chips. So, and I got him a time or two, but, and that's part of their job. If you're going to play poker, you got to steal a little bit or you're not going to do any good. So, but it's all fun. And, I played play with a lot of great people and quite a few of them that you see on TV on the poker tournaments.
Wow. Now, in reading your book, Tales from the Riverside, I was struck by the fact that you didn't just enjoy all your time living in the swamp, but you had a bad accident at one point. Can you tell us about that?
Which one?
The propane bottle. December 2000.
Oh, yeah, that was back when I was doing the general contractor. We were doing a job, and we were in a town about 50 miles from here, and doing a roof job, and it was a torch down roof, and then had a 40 pound propane bottle sitting in the middle of the roof, and about 10 o'clock it was time to do a little torch work, a little finish work, but when I walked over there and touched that propane bottle, it exploded. It broke in the middle, and the top half hit me in the belt line. And I was out for probably 2 or 3 seconds, and it blew me about 15 feet. And I woke up on my back and saw this big old propane cloud floating up in the air. If it had ignited, it would have burned me up and killed me right there. But fortunately, it didn't. It shattered my pelvis. It cut my legs open and cut me from hip to hip and did some pretty good damage. In fact, the doctor told me after he thought I was going to survive that he was really surprised that I did make it through. But, I've worked hard all my life. I was tough as boot leather, and I think that's probably what saved me.
That's pretty scary. When I asked about that, you said which one? There's been other accidents?
I got tied in with killer bees one time, actually twice, but one time was really bad. Hurricane Harvey, I spent the night in 140 mile an hour winds on top of my truck. And, that's in Tales from the Riverside. That did happen in a swamp. That was a little over 3 years ago. And
now,
the truck that I spent the night on, it's in the shop right now. I've got the engine running and just about have the whole drivetrain taken care of. And hopefully in next week or two, I'm going to be able to drive that thing as soon as I can get an inspection sticker.
Well, your description of that whole night is very vivid in the book. Very vivid. It's kind of alarming even.
I spewed some words from Forrest Gump out of that book, out of that story.
Did you ever find out the cause of the propane explosion?
The tank was overfilled.
Just
and
overfilled?
The pop-off valve didn't pop off, yeah.
Wow. All right, now for the listeners, when Larry says he lives in the swamp, he means he lives in the swamp. So what kind of wildlife are we talking about down there?
Alligators, mostly. Hordes of mosquitoes. We've got some pesky raccoons and opossums. Occasional bobcat, coyotes. We hear coyotes at night on a regular basis. I've got an orchard here, a pond here by the house, and an orchard on the other side of that. And here, the past week or so, I've had a little deer out there rubbing the bark off some of my trees, some of the smaller ones that don't have protection around them. But there's a lot of critters around here. A lot of mice. We have five cats that, you know, we keep cats around here. And in fact, there was a mouse, piece of a mouse laying on the floor mat there on the porch this morning.
Leftover from breakfast. You ever have any of some of these wild critters wander up into your house or attempt to?
A snake or two. I was building the house and it wasn't completely finished, but we moved in after we got a bedroom and a kitchen going and a bathroom. And one night I opened the shower door and started to step in, and there was a snake sitting there staring at me.
I hate snakes.
I do too. We've found them in the living room. You know, there's a snake or two in here, but not as often as there used to be. But you know, I've trampled over snakes all my life, and I don't like them any more than I do. Than anybody else. In fact, I had an air conditioner guy down here a few years back, and I think this story might be in Tales from Riverside too. But there were some leaves in the bottom of the condenser unit outside while he was working on it. So I'll clean these leaves out. And I reached down there, grabbed a handful of leaves, and came up with a copperhead, and it bit me on the thumb.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah. Ooh.
Did he inject the poison, or did you get away with that?
Oh, yeah. No, he gave me some poison.
Ooh.
You'll have to finish. You'll have to read what happened in Tales from the Riverside.
Yeah, oh, well, definitely.
If it's not in there, email me and I'll give you my phone number. You can call me and I'll tell you the story.
Okay. Well, one of my favorite little things about wildlife and Tales from the Riverside is about your mallard duck that got kind of friendly for a while there.
Oh, yeah. You know, the pond here beside the house, you know, we've had so many alligators in there that, but I tried to raise some mallard ducks for a while, and we kept losing ducks. We finally got down to one. And that mallard drake, you know, he would come and go. You know, we never clipped the wings or anything. But, one day I was sitting in there, out there on the porch, and heard the pecking on the door. And I looked over, that mallard's sitting there peeking in the door, wanting some corn. You know, I fed them kernel corn on a regular basis when they came back. So, but there's just too many alligators to raise chickens and ducks and a few other things around here.
Well, the picture of the duck is in the book, Tales from the Riverside. So there's evidence there. You can see him up on the porch knocking on the door.
Right.
We do have a question.
There's also a picture in there of an alligator with a dead duck in its mouth.
That's right. Remember that.
Yeah.
We do have a question over on Twitter from Robert Williscroft. He wants to know, did you play real poker in your youth, or did you stay with Texas Hold'em?
We played real poker. We played 7-card stud, 5-card draw. But as soon as I found out about No Limit Hold'em, you know, that's about all I play anymore.
Well, all this talk about Tales from the Riverside, we've got a commercial. What do you think, Beam?
Okay. And then when we get out of the commercial, we do have a caller as well. And I believe Verwayne Greenhoe had another comment there on Twitter. But let's go ahead and do Tales from the Riverside.
Once I got a good taste of the swamp, there was no place else on earth I wanted to live. After 54 years, I know I made the right choice. Life here is tough, though. I nearly died several times, but what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? I've seen things and done things others can't even imagine, and this has made me a most unique author. Would you like to read some of my stories? Now you can. Experience the danger of the swamp from the comfort of your own home. and without the need for professional medical services. Take off your shoes and walk on the wild side with Tales from the Riverside. You won't want to put this one down. I'm author Larry Landgraf, and these are my stories.
Grab your copy today. So, Stephen,
you reminded me of a pet deer that we had.
A pet deer?
Yeah, we had a pet deer, had him here for a couple of years. He'd, you know, come around. He was just as gentle as he could be, and he liked his back scratched, you know, just like a cat or a dog. And I think there's a picture of him in the in Tales from the Riverside. Maybe a couple of pictures of him in there.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Stephen, you want to get that tweet from Verwayne before we grab this phone call?
Yeah, Verwayne Greenho says, "Oh yeah, I bet that was some interesting work. My brother-in-law was a true Cajun. He worked the swamps there to gather gator meat."
Gator meat. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and take this call and see who this is. Welcome to the show, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Ellen Eileen.
Hello, Eileen. Welcome to the show.
Larry, significant other.
Right.
Yeah, I was just listening to the part about the snakes, and I remember one time, you know, I'm not used to critters at all, and one time I was here in the kitchen. I don't know what I was doing, and Larry had one of these sticky traps on the kitchen counter for some reason. And I turned around, and there was a snake on the sticky trap.
Oh,
wow.
It had fallen from above somewhere, and it was stuck.
That would freak me out.
It nearly made me scream, I'll tell you that.
That
but
would
Larry
freak
really
me out.
Me to watch where I'm going and always keep my eyes open, but I never expected something in the kitchen like that.
Yeah, you're supposed to watch where you step when you're outside, not where you put your hand while you're making something to eat.
In the kitchen, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to share that. So.
Well, thanks for calling in and being part of the show.
Sure. Glad to do it. Thanks.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, so...
I think that was one of the first things I taught Ellen when we moved down here. You know, you've always got to watch your step. And, you know, one day she was walking out to her garden, and there was a moccasin laying right between the house and her garden. And she came back in and got me. And, yep, I told her, yep, that would have killed you or could have killed you.
Could have,
so,
yeah.
You know, she's learned to watch where she walks. You know, she still has a time with mosquitoes and fire ants, but she hadn't had any problems with the snakes yet. No, hopefully that'll stay that way. As long as she watches where she walks, she'll be okay.
Now, how long has she been out in the swamp with you?
Since 2009?
2009. She's been here. She moved in here about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay, so then she's probably adapted to it then. Keeps her eyes open. Yeah, the fire ants.
Yeah.
I lived in Florida for a couple of years, way down in Fort Myers. No, the fire ants. Oh, I hated those things. I got stung all the time by them.
Yeah, that's almost a daily thing with me down here. I'm always finding a few fire ants. You know, you can't get rid of all of them. But, you know, though we try, but mosquitoes and fire ants, you just have to learn to live with them and watch where you walk.
So how about we shift gears a little bit and talk about how to be a smart SOB like me? What genre is this book?
A Larry Landgraf genre. Ellen calls it, I guess the genre would be a rant. Ellen, that's what Ellen calls it, my rant. I call it my autobiography. You know, there's a lot of me in there. You may not like me after you get through reading it, but you'll know me pretty well. there's a it starts back way when I was a kid. I went to college for 4 years. I majored in math, minored in chemistry, biology, and history. So I'm fairly book smart, but I'm really proud of what I've learned by doing things. I wanted to build a house, so I bought a $10 book and I built the house. I learned how to do the electrical work. I poured the slab, framed it out. I did all the electrical, the plumbing, the air conditioning. I installed everything, top to bottom. So I'm a decent welder. I've learned how to do things by doing. You make a lot of mistakes, but if you have to do something and you work at it, you're going to get better. And so these days I can do pretty much anything.
Well, that's the best way to learn, hands-on and doing it. That's the way I am, especially with a lot of these new computer software. That's, I can sit and watch a video on somebody doing it, but until I get in there and actually do it myself, I'm not going to retain much. But you do it yourself and you learn something. So you're kind of the old school American, where you put your nose to the grindstone.
I took a computer course when the college here in Victoria didn't even have a computer. We had to send our programs off to Southwest Texas to get them run. They were punch cards.
Wow.
The program.
Wow, I remember.
I do video editing. I do photo editing. I make my own book trailers. If I want to do something and I don't know how, well, then I read and learn how. Writing the screenplays. I didn't know how to write a screenplay, but with the computers these days, just type in how to write a screenplay, and there you go. So, one thing I cannot do, and that's sing. That's why I have a professional do it.
Boy, you and me both. So the SOB book, it's not just about you, but you also give advice to readers, too. What kind of advice do you give?
Just things you should, one of the things people need to learn, a lot of stuff to get through life. And that's what it started out as, a self-help book, but then it turned into the rant later. But, people need to know things. I've got a little chemistry in there, a little biology, a little math, basic stuff, astronomy, I think, just different things that people should know, that the Earth isn't flat anymore. if you don't teach people this stuff, they're not going to know. But, need to know a little bit about the things around them. If you live in a city, you need to know a few things about your environment, and you can't just sit in the house all the time. You need to get out and do things. You'll get your share of bumps, but I think basically I just want to tell people that, don't depend on somebody else to do things for you. Learn, get out and learn to do things. And it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, I got a strong sense of don't take any BS, too. Just stand up for yourself and get out there and do what you want to do.
That's right. Don't let anybody tell you can't do something. I don't believe anybody's told me that I can't do anything, because I hit the ground running when I was about 12 years old. People need to learn things. If you get stuck in a rut, let me put it this way. If you're not happy, do something different.
Great. Right on.
Great. And as Stephen just said, you don't take any BS. And as you said, you don't take anything from anybody that's going to tell you can't do something. You said you hit the ground running at age 12. was this something that you learned on your own, or did you like, was your father the same way, or did you have older brothers that maybe you learned from, or is,
no,
you know,
yeah.
or sisters?
Yeah. my mom and dad worked all the time. One of my sisters was never around. So I was pretty much on my own, and I found out that there's fun stuff to do outside, and the more I did, the more I wanted to do. You know, it's just kind of instinctual, I guess. I didn't care about being in the house, so I got outside and did things. And a lot of it was very dangerous. You know, like I said earlier, I trampled over snakes all my life. There might even be a story about some rattlesnakes that we ran into way back when I had a cousin that was 10 months younger than I am, and we ran around like wild Indians out in the 800 acres of pasture that we had. It also had a creek running through it, and it had plenty of moccasins and all other kinds of stuff to get into. But we survived.
That's what matters.
I'm kind of about the rattlesnakes now.
Yeah, there's one in Tails from the Riverside, too, but that was right out the back door here.
Yeah.
Well, we do have another comment on Twitter from Robert Williscroft, and it's just a simple statement. He says, "Hey, Larry, you're my kind of guy."
All right.
He's Robert Williscroft. He's had some amazing adventures packed into his life as well. So you two would probably have a heck of a time trading stories.
And he was a guest on
this
podcast, too. So make sure you listeners go find that in the archives and have a listen.
Yeah,
I know the name, and I know a little bit about the guy. I think I might have listened to some stuff. I know I've seen his books around. Yeah, we'll have to trade some stories one of these days.
Definitely. Okay, we want to ask you about the Into series, and you've mentioned it a couple of times about writing them, but you haven't really told us what they're about. Before we do that, we've got another song that goes with the series too, called "No Heart at All." So let's listen to a little bit of that, and then we'll let you tell us about the books.
All right.
All right.
There's no one for me at home, and I need a wife. I'm gonna grow a little family. One thing missing from my life. Though it's so far away, I head out west. No, I don't have a choice to fill this emptiness. I ambled in and she caught my eye. She threw a smile my way. All because I found my love that day. I thought that she would be my queen, my all and everything. And I was happy to be her king.
All right, that's No Heart at All, another song written by Larry Landgraf. That song to me has like this kind of vibe. It's the kind of song that I imagine Keith Whitley would have sang back in the day. That's what it reminds me of. And Keith was a great singer and just great storyteller with his music. Now, where can listeners hear the full versions of these songs?
They're on most of the music sites, you know, iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify. You can go to Spotify and type in my name, or one of the other sites, type in my name, and you should be able to find the songs. And the easiest way is to go to my website, intoautumn.com, and
into
look
autumn.
Under the videos.
Intoautumn.com. All right.
Yes, same as the first book of the series. That's the easiest way to get to them.
So what is this series about?
It's an apocalyptic series. You know, Lars Lindgren and Eileen Branson, you know, she's a city gal, he's a country guy, retired out in the country. His wife didn't want to go, so they split up. And after a few years out in the boondocks alone, well, he made a few trips to Vegas and looked around online to try to find him a gal, but that nothing worked out. But city gal fell into his lap. And then the grid shut down. And that's the reason the city gal showed up on his doorstep. But she was scared of him at first, but they ended up falling in love, and it was a tough time, though. You know, there were a lot of predatory invasions in their valley, which they eventually named Peaceful Valley. You know, they had a few neighbors, and they band together and managed to survive. You know, they not only had to worry about intruders, which they learned to deal with, they also had to grow food and hunt deer and, you know, forage for different kinds of food and find new sources of food, which they made a few trips to some outlying towns. But the story, yeah, I can't give away all the story. You know, it's story. There's a lot of different things in this book. It's murder, sex, and violence, but it's a lot more than that.
Does it cover a short time span or multi-generations or?
It covers a few years. I think the twins that were born, neighbor Reggie, the crazy guy in the book, was Lars's best friend. His daughter found her way back to Peaceful Valley, and Lars' son as well. And Lars' son and Reggie's daughter got together and ended up having a set of twins. I think they were about four years old at the end of the book. But book two, Into Spring, you know, these guys have grown up. You know, they're about 17, 18 years old, and they have some ventures of their own. And they meet up with a gal called Sandra Hawkins. You know, I've got a friend that lives here nearby that's read all my books. And he was mad at me after ended up finishing Into Spring. I wasn't too sure he was going to buy book three. But he was mad at me because Sandra Hawkins was still alive at the end of the book. She was that bad.
That bad. Well, do you know what? That's the sign of a good story and a good writer is when you elicit emotion from your readers like that. That, hey, you should have whacked that one.
Yeah, you should, if you read all four books of the series, you should experience just about every emotion that there is. You might hate me sometimes. I know you'll laugh a little bit, but you'll think a bit. You'll think about things, and you'll be hurt by things. One of my readers told me, you know, she didn't want to spoil it with her review, but she told me on the side that, you know, this hurt me. I got to liking these characters. So don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I think it's important to know, too. I mean, I sometimes use the word dystopian when I'm promoting these. They're just like dystopian thrillers, but they're also very warm-hearted. There's happy moments. There's harsh reality moments. It's that whole range. And it's not the kind of book that's not the kind of series that's going to leave you feeling bad, because you're rooting for some good characters, some good people, and they have a lot of accomplishments and accomplish a lot of good. But you're also not afraid to kill off some characters or do whatever it takes to make it all real.
No.
So this the fifth book, you said you've started writing the fifth book, or you're just working on the ideas?
No, I'm not sure where I'm going to go. I know there's a fifth book out there somewhere in the back of my head, I'm concentrating on the music right now. I've got two songs done. There's two more for the other two books of the series. There may be one from Tales from the Riverside. And my best friend up in Fort Worth, who I patterned Crazy Reggie in into Autumn from, he's got, he's a smart guy, and he's listened to the songs, and he said, "Hey, let's write some songs together." I never know where this is going to go. If a book gets done, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and that voice in my back of my head will tell me, let's write this book.
Well, that's kind of the way I write too. I mean, I don't write on a schedule. I'm trying to get one done at such and such time. And well, if it doesn't get done, it'll get done eventually. Before we move on to the next book, we do have another comment from Robert G. Williscroft on Twitter, and this is kind of humorous. He says, talking about, trading stories with you, he said, we can trade some C stories. And he says, the difference between C story and a fairy tale is that fairy tales commence with once upon a time, whereas C stories start with, now this is no shit. Well put, Robert.
Yeah.
I think that might be the title of Robert's memoir.
Well, Tales from the Riverside are all true stories, and they're not exaggerated because I didn't have to.
Right.
Well, you're in the swamp.
And it's a fun, easy read too, because they're like they're short essays. They're 3, 4, 5, 6 pages each, and then the whole thing links together and tells the bigger story of your life. But it's very easy to digest. I mean, you're not getting into anything long. It's just read a few and go about your business. Pick it up that night.
Yep.
Now,
it's like me sitting on the porch, and it's like me sitting out on the back porch telling you the story. A lot of people have liked that.
Yeah, that's some of the best storytellers. That's how they. Mark Twain was good like that, in some of his stories where it kind of felt like he was sitting there in a chair talking to you, telling you a story. Now, if the swamp or dystopian nightmares isn't your cup of tea, you've written a kid's book.
Surprised me.
Yeah, surprised me too.
I got the call from Larry saying, hey, guess what? We're publishing a kid's book next. I about fell off my chair.
Yeah, what
like
brought
I said,
that about?
I never know where things are going. And it's another swamp story, but it's a different kind of swamp story. Ali Orangutan, he was born and grew up in a zoo. And, they never let the apes get overcrowded in the zoo, so he was going to be transported to another zoo. He was in Houston. They were taking him to Brownsville. Between Houston and Brownsville, there is a swamp, and it's similar to my swamp. And the train derailed on a train trestle, and he escaped. But he found himself out in an environment that he didn't know anything about. And he met some interesting characters, including Al the Alligator. And let's see, who else? Shirley the Squirrel. Some of the critters were afraid of him, and some of them, like the mother owl, kind of took him under her wing, and she wasn't afraid of him because she could fly. So they got to be good friends. Ollie was having trouble finding enough food, and also he some of the critters out there wanted him for food. the owl helped Ollie find an old hermit down the way, and took him a while to get there, and it was a pretty good ordeal, but he might live happily ever after, and he might not. You'll have to read the book. Read the book. It's geared for children 9 to 12 plus, but I've had one of my editors read it, and she let her dad read it, who was in his 80s or 90s, and he loved the book as well. So, it's a book for all ages, though it's geared for children.
Now, it is a chapter book, so it is a bit of a read, but it's also full of beautiful artwork. You can see the various scenes with Ollie Orangutan interacting with the woodpecker and the gator and things like that, too. So it's an excellent book. You haven't said the title of the book yet, Larry. We need to send people to go order their copies.
All right, The Adventures of Ollie Orangutan.
The Adventures of Ollie Orangutan.
Go ahead, Stephen.
I started to say there's also one called Las Aventuras de Ollie Orangutan that's coming out next week or so. What's that about?
I woke up in the middle of the night again, and something told me, let's get this thing translated into Spanish. There's a big market out there. And hey, Gary, we're going to have to do a Spanish version. So I hired I translated using Google Translate. And that got me a big discount on a professional translator. So it's translated in Spanish. It's proofread. And I think Stephen's got it ready, just about ready to go to print.
Yep, pretty close. I think we got one more proof to do, and I got to finalize the covers probably later tonight. So we're looking to have that out next week.
That's good deal. I'm going to need some copies.
No, I was going to ask, with titles like How to Be an SOB Like Me, to your credit, why did you decide to write a kid's book?
I have not the foggiest idea, to tell you the truth.
That's a loud voice in your head in the middle of the night, huh?
That's right. If you go to intoautumn.com, go to the videos, I'll read that poem I wrote called A Voice in My Head. I'll read it to you, and it'll explain things. But I never know what I'm going to write or do. The music, the screenplays, the children's book, they just come to me in the middle of the night.
Well, once you start to build an audience for Ollie Orangutan, then they're gonna want some more kid books from you,
Uh-huh.
I know.
you got any ideas yet? Surely you've been thinking about something.
All I got to do is go visit the grandkids for a little while, and I'll come up with something.
Okay, well, we are getting close to the end of the show here, and we got a couple minutes left. I'd like to read one more comment from Twitter while we have the chance. It's from Verwayne Greenhoe again. He says, great show. Listening to Larry reminds me of sitting on the porch on the farm, listening to my dad and my grandpa BSing everyone. Great memories. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
And thanks, Verwayne, for tuning in again tonight.
Yes, definitely. So, Larry, how do people find you? What kind of contact, social media, handles? Where are you?
My Twitter site is at Riverman with two R's in the middle and two N's on the end, RIVERRMANN. You can find me at intoautumn.com. I'm on Facebook. Just search, type my name in on Facebook, and you should be able to find me. I'm on Instagram. I think it's Larry.Landgraf. Where else am I? I'm everywhere. I'm on Goodreads. You can find me on Goodreads.
You're at FreshInkGroup.com too.
I'm a freshinkgroup.com. I'm on all authors. I'm out there. You know, I started in September of 2015 when I finished Into Autumn, and I decided to, you know, if I was going to sell books, I'm going to have to put myself out there. So I'm out there. If I'm not on your particular site, try another one, because I'm on a lot of them.
Great. Our last Twitter comment, Bernard Fung has noted the glorious beauty of autumn. So thanks to Larry Landgraf, our guest today, and to Ellen for calling in, and everybody who got on Twitter and used the hashtag Fresh Ink Group. I want to remind you that this show with Larry is going to be in the archive and on four of our websites.
Yeah, so you can find this on Facebook. We'll share the links on Twitter as well and in Instagram. And look for us on those sites at Facebook. It's Fresh Ink Group LLC. On Twitter, it's at Fresh Ink Group. And on Instagram, there are two of them, actually. There's Fig Publishing and Fresh Ink Group. Those archive shows are also, as Stephen had mentioned, they're on the YouTube channel and they're on various websites, beamweeks.com, freshinkgroup.com, and stephengees.com. So you've got plenty of places to listen.
Thanks again, Larry, for joining
us. Thank you, Stephen and Beam, for having me, and everybody that showed up and commented. And even if you just listened, thank you for showing up.
That's terrific. And listeners, we'll see you here next week at same time, same place. And we'll try to have another scintillating guest for you. Thanks again.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Good night.
You've been a part of Voice of Indie, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.